crowd froze up when the thunder cracked. Truth on a mic and a life attacked. He talked about hope in a storming land, Bible in the heart and a promise in his hands. But a shadow reached from a coward's perch, cut down a son in the middle of church. And I swear if the tables turned the other way, y'all know there'd be fires in the streets today. But here we stand with candles and a folded flag, begging God for mercy on the road we drag. Ain't letting go of your hand.
So, our part two for this hour is John Gordon. And John Gordon is the host of the syndicated radio show, The Truth with John Gordon. He's a graduate of Mercer University Law School in Georgia. He's a business owner and entrepreneur who has also worked as a journalist and a reporter in Macon and Atlanta. He was the Trump-endorsed Republican candidate for Georgia Attorney General in 2022. And right now, instead of being here in the cold and the fog, he lives in Palm Beach, Florida. That's noteworthy here in December. So, Mr. Gordon, what do you have for us today regarding the trial now that we're getting into?
Well, first of all, Merry Christmas to you and your listeners, and it's good to be with you.
Thanks, and Merry Christmas to you as well.
So what is on your mind today?
Well, you know, I saw this from your publicist, the alleged Charlie Kirk assassin Tyler Robinson makes his first court appearance, and all you heard, whether you saw it or not, but all the news was all about how he was smiling and laughing and joking and whatnot. I never was able to actually tune in and watch all that, but...
Well, I watched him on the live stream from the courtroom. I did not think he was laughing and being frivolous. I thought he was engaged with his lawyers having a normal human interaction. So I thought those headlines were very exaggerated and bogus. I'll start with saying I think that the circumstantial evidence is probative of his innocence. I don't believe that Tyler Robinson killed Charlie Kirk. I do believe he had a role in it. What role he played, I do not know. But I can just tell you this. The information that is coming out of Turning Point USA and the financial questions that have arisen since Charlie's death are very concerning to me. And I don't know. I don't even have a suspicion of what has happened. All I know is that there is a swirl of sketchy stuff surrounding the assassination. I knew Charlie. I had the utmost respect for him. I can confidently say at 72 years old, he is without question the smartest single person I ever met. He was self-educated. He got his college degree online. And he was conversant on any subject. He was faithful. He was patriotic. I think he was an honest person. And the worst thing that you could say about him is that he just simply did not suffer fools lightly.
Yeah.
But he was a father and a husband. And it has hit me hard. I mean, it just sucker punched me in my gut. And the most disturbing thing about it to me, second to his losing his life, is it seems to me that we have established a new low in this country where political assassination is in the process of being normalized and people are cheering the death of Charlie Kirk. How dare them?
Yeah.
How dare them?
Yeah. Because, well, and and of all the people, right? Because his message was always that it was better to talk about it than fight about it. You know, let's hear your ideas. If your ideas win, then your ideas win. But he was the master of, well, let's talk about that some more. And then the person who was just there slinging, you know, BS, you know, kind of blows up in front of the crowd, which I'm sure was awkward for them, but they kept doing it. You know, it's funny, people couldn't resist.
Well, it almost seemed to be a competition on some level of, can you put Charlie in check in one of these verbal banters? And I think it was part sport and part entertainment, but also in his mind, he was doing a service to these students who were being fed wokeism, and he wanted to inject what he considered to be reality in the real world. And I think he did a miraculous job. I first met him in 2017 on the University of Georgia campus. I was there for a fundraiser for then candidate Brian Kemp, now governor of Georgia, and Charlie was there with Don Jr., and they were about to go into an auditorium with 3,000 college kids. And I thought it was very inspirational and very noble of him to have done that. But, you know, he ended up with a big business. I mean, a huge $140 million a year business and an infrastructure and bricks and mortar. So at 30 years old, he accomplished more than I have in 72 years.
And the business end of it, how much do you think the business end of it had to do with his assassination? It kind of sounds like maybe those are connected, or am I misunderstanding?
I don't have evidence to connect the two. What I do know is that there's a lot of smoke from a lot of directions. Candace Owens has done a phenomenal job of highlighting these. She's being, and the thing that really confirms for me that there is something toward that we have not been told is that nobody in Turning Point and in their orbit want to talk about it. And if you do talk about it, you're evil. Now that's disgusting. That here's someone that's close to them, family, his Turning Point family, and close personal friends, and they don't want to talk about it. And Glenn Beck is calling people out if they raise questions. That ought to tell you something. I just don't know what it tells you, except they don't want to talk about it. What are they hiding?
Yeah, that does seem a little bit weird. And the part of the list on what Kimberly had sent for today was what to expect from Tyler Robinson's first in-person appearance. I guess people saw that, and there were a variety of things to be. Because really, I kept hearing about how he was laughing and whatnot, but I never did see it. So you're just saying he was just talking to them and his attorneys. And let's face it, even in the most dire circumstances, God knows I'd be the last one to say there's nothing funny, because there's always something funny in our family.
It was before the proceedings started. He was sitting at the defense table with his lawyers. And
okay.
He wasn't mocking the proceeding. He was just sitting there casually, calmly having a conversation with his lawyers, and I would think probably trying to relieve their collective tension.
Sure.
Then the court immediately went into a closed door session that lasted for 2 hours. I think that was probably to consider defense motions about prejudicial optics that made Tyler Robinson look guilty, potentially in their eyes, like that he was shackled, and the position of the camera in the courtroom and thing, you know, geriatrics like that. I promise you, I have no bias. I have no dog in the hunt. The only thing I care about is the truth. But the narrative that we have been fed just doesn't add up on any level. Here's a 19-year-old kid, or maybe he was 19, I think. And he is supposed to have gotten off a 200-yard shot that two expert ex-Navy SEALs independently both said they could not have made. And the heart would have been pumping, the crowd would have been roaring, the large presence of law enforcement there. They just said that combined with the nerves, the pressure of the, and the seriousness of what he was contemplating, that it would have been nearly impossible.
So not the distance, because the distance isn't remarkable.
Well, it's 200 yards.
Well, you tell
the Navy SEALs that, because they said that that scope would have been dancing all over the place if Charlie had been perfectly still, which he wasn't. His head was moving forward and backward and side to side. And they just said that, you know, it's a very difficult shot to have been able to take. That's number one. Number two, AR-15, and I apologize, I derive no pleasure out of saying this, but it would have blown the back of his head off. And there was no exit wound. And you can go on YouTube and watch Dr. Cliff Murchison, Murchison, something like that. He is a forensic scientist and ammunitions expert. And he said, there's just no possible way that the bone in your neck would have stopped that bullet. There is no exit wound. There are just more questions than there are answers. And to think that this lone guy who happened to be in a trans relationship, how convenient is that? And that he disassembled the gun within less than a minute, sprinted off the roof, ran into the woods and reassembled it and put it on a blanket in the woods. What are we talking about? I can't even say these things without smirking. It just defies logic.
And how much of this, because the other note here is how secrecy and sealed filings could shape the prosecution. So how much of this all is, again, haven't been tracking this a whole lot, but how much of this is all secret?
Well, we have not come close to achieving any level of transparency. I mean, there are so many sketchy things. I gave you a few of them.
Sure.
They drove Charlie past a very large trauma center to get to a clinic that didn't have a trauma center connected with it. There were Google searches from Israel in the days before, searching the doctor's name, searching Tyler Robinson's lawyer's name, searching other names that ended up having a connection with the assassination. It's just sketchy as hell. And then Netanyahu, the day after the assassination, says, I didn't do it. Well, I haven't issued a denial. Have you? I mean, who does that and why? Charlie was under pressure from the Jewish community because of his questions about the war in Gaza, and he was starting to question the legitimacy of the war. He alleged that there was genocide. He was accosted in the Hamptons at a fundraiser for a Jewish cause, and he was told to back off. They pressured him unbelievably to keep Tucker off the stage at the Turning Point USA convention that they had in Tampa a month before the assassination. And then there's the issue that Candace Owens has highlighted of Saudi jets stalking Erica Kirk. 75 times Erica and this Saudi jet crossed paths, intersected each other at remote places all throughout the world and the United States. So what's that about? And then you've got the reporting that Zach DiGregorio has done on Wolves and Finance showing that the Turning Point USA 501c4s, that three out of the four failed to make file their tax returns on time. And when he made an issue out of it, the tax returns miraculously got filed. And then that YouTuber, what's his name that just recently has made a big stir out of this, is calling Candace Owens and people that highlight this as evil. I don't think it's evil to ask questions about why an organization with the kind of money that we're talking about neglected to file their tax returns. Then they file their tax returns, and some 80% of the money that they raised and paid was to a state senator from Arizona. So what is that about?
What was that about?
I don't know.
No one knows.
I do not know, and I don't allege anything other than there's so much sketchy stuff going on that we need to put sunshine on it and disinfect it. And there may be very reasonable answers to all of this.
Do you think that stuff comes out in this court case?
Well, it depends on whether there's a serious investigation into it or not and where the facts lead. You know, a lot of people don't file their tax returns. A lot of people don't file their tax returns on time. I have been late filing my tax returns, but I always file for an extension, and yeah. I paid the taxes. But just to not even file, and then when they did file, the address was a shopping mall in Tucson, not Tucson, but not Scottsdale.
Phoenix?
Phoenix, thank you. A shopping center in Phoenix, Arizona with no suite number. And then the Turning Point came back on and said, well, it was to a UPS store with mailboxes that they were using as a place to get mail.
But they didn't say why they paid the guy or lady. I don't know if it was a man or a woman.
They did not touch it. They made no mention of it at all. It was a guy. And you can go watch it. Wolves in Finance is the podcast, and Zach just does some remarkable reporting. He's a CPA, and he's not a conspiratorialist, but he's a fact checker, I would call him.
Well, everyone knows in finance there's a ton to be had if you actually do some homework. It's funny, the first hour we were sort of talking about this on a completely different level, but same idea. One of the other notes here said how early that you may be able to address was how early court motions may signal the strength and strategy of both sides.
I have not seen anything that tips a hand one way or the other.
Is this what they typically look like?
Well, this is shrouded in secrecy. There has not been a lot that's shared in the public domain. But right now, I think that it's largely a matter of formalities and agreeing on the ground rules, agreeing on, you know, the gag order. The judge said initially that anyone who was a witness or potential witness was prohibited from speaking. And then one of the media outlets filed a motion and asked for clarification. And would that include one of the 3,000 people that were attending the event at the university? Would that mean none of them could speak? And they clarified it and said only people that have been named as potential witnesses could not speak, nor could the lawyers, nor could anyone in law enforcement. That's fairly SOP, but in a case like this, I think that the error should be on transparency, not on secrecy. And there's just too many questions. And this act of taking the life of a 30-year-old with as much promise as Charlie had is demonic. You want to talk about evil, that's the evil. Don't for a minute criticize the people that want justice for Charlie. I think that is just wrong on its face.
Yeah. Well, and people, I don't know, you know, we go through these things, and it's a big focus for a while, and then the next thing takes over. Do you think that actually, I mean, that's kind of a factor with all of this?
Well, that's clearly what they're hoping will happen. But, you know, John Fitzgerald Kennedy died 62 years ago on November 22nd of this year. That has not gone away. And the difference between Kennedy's assassination and Charlie Kirk's is that we did not have the internet in 1963. I was home from the fourth grade with the flu. I watched the first news flash come out. I guess it was really the second news flash. I watched Walter Cronkite announce that President Kennedy was dead at approximately 1:30 that day. It was the day that I realized that there was real evil in the world. But today we know what happened to Kennedy. The people that did it are no longer here to be held accountable, although I've maintained that we should try them in memoriam and rip their names off the buildings that disingenuously remember them. And I don't think that we should. I think they should be scorned even if they're not here. Tim Pool, by the way, was the podcaster I was trying to remember a minute ago, who just went apoplectic yesterday and was really, I think he was deserving of a wellness check. He was out of control, and he was spewing venom towards Candace Owens and people like myself who don't buy the narrative and simply want the truth. What is wrong with that? And if you were Charlie's friend, as he professes to be, and I'm sorry, Erica Kirk as well. She's saying you cannot attack my TPUSA family. No one is attacking them. We're asking legitimate intellectual questions that deserve to be answered. When Charlie Kirk, a month before he died or in the last month of his life, wrote a memo removing his chief operating officer, appointing a new chief operating officer, and calling for a Doge-like forensic audit of the books of Turning Point USA. So let's start with Charlie. He's the one who made us aware of concerns within Turning Point. Let's get to the bottom of the financial problems. I don't know, have you seen the videos of Mikey McCoy when Charlie was assassinated?
No.
Mikey McCoy was his chief of staff. What would you do if your best friend had just gotten shot? I would run and start trying to administer CPR. I was trained to do that in college. What did Mikey McCoy did? He immediately was on his cell phone, turned his back, walked 180 degrees around the back of the stage, and is seen exiting calmly, walking to the parking lot immediately after his boss and alleged best friend was shot and killed. The reaction is unnatural, and it raises serious questions. And I've just given you a few here today. The list is lengthy, and they go on. And the American people should demand truth, transparency, and justice.
Wow. Well, don't disagree at all. John Gordon, we must escape because the news is going to overtake us here shortly. What form or fashion it takes is probably not going to have any contribution to what we've been talking about, however, because it's, you know, the news. We will.
Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you, and I appreciate your giving me the latitude to speak and to share the information I've collected.
Very good. You do a show called The Truth with John Gordon. We have the link up, and you can find all of that at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm always speaking my mind, but I'm better off by my tongue. I'm a bad joke at the wrong time. Hell, I'm a legend of my own. Good for some, but I'm not for everyone. Yeah, I'm good for some, but I'm not for everyone.